All right, so we are going to jump right in. And today, we had a little change of plans. We were supposed to be talking about naturally occurring retirement communities, but we're going to push that off until some other time, probably next year sometime. It's an interesting topic. I was really excited about it, but my speaker had a conflict, and that's okay, because that means I get to talk about this resource, the super cool tool that I am excited about from the Frameworks Institute. So the Frameworks Institute in general is a nonprofit. It was founded in 1999, which my first thought on that is, oh, that's not so long ago. It turns out it's almost 20 years ago. I don't quite know how that happened. So they've been working for quite a while on a lot of different issues, and their goal and their purpose is applied communications research and knowledge translation. So basically what they do is they take an issue, they do some research around how the public thinks about that issue, as well as how experts think about that issue and what experts wish they could convey about that issue. They figure out where the gaps are and where the overlap is, and then they come up with approaches to address those gaps in the understanding of issues in the expert arena versus how the public sees those issues. And their goal, their mission, is to advance communication capacity by identifying, translating, and modeling relevant scholarly research to frame the public discourse on social problems. So they do this research looking at where those gaps are, and then they push that forward, and they do research around communication strategies, how to articulate and how to help the public think about various issues, and which ones are actually effective at bridging those gaps and which ones are not. So kind of what helps and what hurts. That all probably sounds very vague and sort of confusing right now, but I think you'll understand it a little bit more as we get into the one particular toolkit that we're going to talk about today. But the main idea is that the way an issue is framed, the way that it's discussed, can have a tangible impact on public discourse, public opinion, and public policy, and then all of those influence eventual outcomes. So if we're wanting to make progress and affect change, one of the places to start is on this area of communication and public discourse, because that guides the rest of the field. If we don't have the public thinking about an issue in a way that's realistic, they're not ready or open to accept policy changes or to affect change on their own to improve outcomes. So today we are going to talk about the work that the Frameworks Institute does on aging specifically, but they do have a vast array of subjects that they tackle, from families and children, health issues, international issues. There's even one on affordable housing, and that's something that I've heard from some of the family living educators is important to them. There's a whole report on affordable housing in and of itself. So today we are going to focus on aging in particular, because this is the call that I run, and its point is to be on aging. But I just wanted you to know that there are a lot of other topic areas there as well, where you can get a lot of information about expert views, public views, gaps, and then also toolkits with that. So feel free to click around when you have a chance. So in the email that was sent around by Libby, I think there was a link to the Frameworks Institute, to their homepage. I don't need you to go there right now. I just want you to know that that's available. And what I want to do today is just walk you through a little bit of what they've done research-wise around aging, and then tell you just a little bit about the toolkit that they put together with that information, and hopefully make you interested enough in this that you are going to go back in and go look at that toolkit and use some of the tools that they provide. Okay, so just to get started on this. Several years ago, they started this work on aging, and it started with an initial report from 2015 that they called Gauging Aging. And that was an analysis of how experts view aging, meaning what they wish they could communicate to the public, versus how the public views aging, and then mapping out those viewpoints. So the whole thing is really interesting. To me it was. You may or may not want to go back and read that yourself, but there's a few key points that I want to highlight here. One of the big ones is that the theme that came up from the experts a lot is this idea of diversity in individuals as they age. There's no one aging. And if you listen to these coffee breaks regularly, you've heard me say this before. I've talked about this in a couple different segments. But there's huge diversity in aging. People have vastly different outcomes at vastly different ages. There are people who are healthy as can be until 105, and there are people who start getting arthritis at 50. So it's just vastly different. And there's a lot of reasons for that. Some of it is lifestyle, people exercising, people eating right. But a lot of it is also genetics, and a lot of it is social determinants. So if people have the opportunity to exercise, if they have the money to buy fruits and vegetables, there's a lot of social determinants that go into it. And the outcome is all of these things coming together and resulting in these vastly different experiences of aging for different individuals. The public viewpoint, on the other hand, tends to be a little bit more one note, and there's these mental models that the public tends to adhere to, and sometimes they're conflicting. So one example is this idea of an aging ideal. There's this idea that, okay, the ideal is, as one example, let's say you retire to Florida and you get to travel and you see your grandkids, but you see them just long enough to get the snuggles and rile them up, and then you hand them back to the parents. You are healthy as a horse as long as can be, and then it's like in the movie Titanic, where then it's just you just drop dead with no illness, and you're healthy, and then you get to move on. So that's one mental model, this idea of you're healthy, you're traveling, it's like a vacation, it's a chance to see the world and see your grandkids and just really have fun. That's what people consider to be, that's one example of what people might consider to be the ideal. Then there's the flip side of that, where they also see that that's the ideal, but what's real, they have a different mental model of. They see real, and I'm saying they as in this is sort of the general public, the sort of amalgamation of public opinion. So the real usually focuses on something more like disease, deterioration, increasing dependency, isolation, ineffectiveness, sort of a dismal view of what life is actually like as people age, which is really in contrast to what they see as the ideal of retirement and of aging. So then there's also this sort of binary view of aging. There's either you're old or you're not old, and us versus them. And that's a little bit funny because almost no one puts themselves in that them category, right? Like old is always 5 years older than you are right now. And so that's sort of there's this view of a zero-sum game where it's us versus them. If we're doing things to support the older population, that means we're not doing things to support me or the younger population. And that us versus them mindset is really very binary and very not realistic to the way that society works in general. So those whole narratives, those are just a couple of examples that they talk about in the report. So those whole narratives really overlook the fact that an aging population impacts the society as a whole. And in the report, they call this a cognitive hole. I'm just going to read one segment of the report that I feel like illustrates this really well. So they say, the public is also not attuned to the myriad of ways that social and economic conditions operating at the population level structure people's experience of their older years in markedly divergent ways. Their inattention to these social determinants allows them to easily fall back on more individualized explanations for why some older Americans do not do well, and for private solutions to these purportedly private causes. The public also lacks an understanding of ageism and of the prevalence of this discriminatory practice. This creates a lack of awareness of the degree to which ageism compromises the opportunities and wellness of older Americans. To the extent that ageism is not even seen as a problem, efforts to address this issue are likely to either be misunderstood or dismissed entirely. And so that's just this idea that there's this big gap between what the experts see, what they see as the impacts of ageism, the way that they talk about it and the way that they can sort of see the downstream effects of that versus the way that the public in general tends to look at this issue and the way that it tends to be talked about in public discourse. And there's this gap there that if we don't fill it, then we're not really making the best use of our resources. So they conclude with some collective communication challenges that they think will need to be addressed in order to improve society around these issues. So that was in 2015. Again, it's a really interesting report. If you have time and it sounds interesting to you, I recommend reading it. The way that they talk about the expert views and then also these mental models that the public tends to adhere to is enlightening and very interesting. And even for me, there were some of the mental models where I was like, oh, I definitely think about subjects that way sometimes. So it's also a little bit self-revelatory in my case. So then just this year, just in 2017, they followed this up with a couple of additional reports. And the goal of those reports were to compile some information based on research that they had done supporting a robust, healthy, age-integrated society. And that part is how they articulate it, support a robust, healthy, age-integrated society. So I'm going to just quote the very first sentence of one of those reports to give you a sense of where they're going with that. And they say, right now, aging simply isn't an issue Americans are thinking about as a matter that requires a public response. This reality reveals a serious risk of policy inertia or worse, rollbacks of existing supports. And so then they go out on to outline four priorities, priority areas about how we communicate and how we think about these issues. So the first one is redefining aging, especially how it relates to this idea of fatalism or the idea that nothing can be done about aging or nothing can be done about illnesses or well-being issues or quality of life issues in aging. And the attitude that just completely ignores the social determinants of health. They highlight how social contexts and social policies influence aging, in particular well-being. One of the priorities is elevating awareness around ageism and why it's important and how it looks in terms of implicit bias and institutional ageism, the idea that this isn't, people aren't intentionally being ageist. It's just that this is sort of what's filtered into the way that people think through a lifetime of being exposed to these messages. And creating a sense of shared stake, public purpose, and potential for improvement. So they're really highlighting here this idea that the way that the public views aging right now is very much in the sense of there's nothing to be done about it, people made their choices, and if we are putting resources toward older adults, that's taking away resources from other groups, versus the idea that we as a society can make changes. Changes are possible. And there's good reason to make changes, and making changes will actually improve society for all of us. So that's kind of the flip that they are focusing on here. And then they highlight some themes that they found to be effective in communicating around those priorities. And there's two really big ones that I'm just going to mention now, and then I'll get back to in another minute or two. But these ideas of drawing on values of justice and injustice, and then ingenuity and using creativity to solve these problems and sort of elevate, the rising tide raises all boats sort of a thing. Interestingly, and I wish that I had made more notes on this because I kind of wish that I could talk about this a little bit more. I focus on the what we should do side, but they had some really interesting things that highlight unintended consequences, basically things that you shouldn't be doing and that we shouldn't be doing when we're communicating about aging. One of them that comes up in a different report is the words that we use to describe older adults. Now, I'm used to using the word older adults. You'll hear me say that all the time. Their recommendation is that we say older people. And that's because they did some research. They pitched this term. They pitched different terms to a group of people. And what they came back with is that when people hear older adults, they think of someone in their 50s. On the other far end of the other spectrum, if they hear seniors or elders, they think of someone, I think, in their 70s. But older people, as opposed to older adults or any of the other terms, older people sort of makes people think of the correct time frame. So they really think of like 65 and above when they think of older people, as opposed to older adults or as opposed to seniors. And it makes them think about more of the positive versus the negative implications and issues that surround aging. So if you say elders to someone, they're probably thinking of someone frail, and that doesn't really do a good job of encompassing the whole population. If you say older people, there tends to be a more breadth of understanding of who older people are, and it doesn't narrow down to one specific group, and it's not so wide that we don't think of older people as they age. I feel like I talked in circles on that. So if you have questions about that, I'm going to ask you to hold them, but we can come back to those in a minute. Another thing, which I am also guilty of, is that they recommend not leading with the demographic change story. They think that leading with the demographic change story doesn't serve the communication strategy as well. And that was based on research that they did showing that that was not an effective way to get the whole message across versus some of the other suggestions that I'll get to in a minute here. So that was one report. And then I had another report that also came out this year, which detailed more of what they see as being useful strategies for disrupting the public's mental model around older adults and around older people as a group set apart. So this idea that older adults are different, us versus them, there's nothing we can do about it. So they recommend some specific frames that will that were effective in their research to aligning the public's views with the expert views in order to pave that way forward to community-level improvements. And there were two things that they focused on. The first one is confronting injustice. So framing this whole issue of addressing ageism and implicit bias head-on. And the way that they describe this is imagining someone saying, right now, our society is not treating older adults as equals. In fact, we are marginalizing their participation and minimizing their contribution. To live up to our ideals, we must confront the injustice of ageism. And so the idea there is that when we have this public discourse around older adults as being frail, as being incompetent, as being, if we have that paternalistic attitude where we need to care for them because they can't care for themselves or they don't need to care for themselves anymore, that really limits their ability to use their skills and experiences that they've spent a lifetime developing in ways that can help all of our society. And that they're framing as an injustice, that is something that should not be the case. And when we frame it as an injustice, it sets up the possibility of overcoming that and allowing more participation and better use of the skills of people across the life course of everyone in society. The other frame that they recommend, or the narrative that they found in their research to be effective, is called embracing the dynamic. And the story around that goes something like this. As we get older, we build momentum, with the force of built-up experience and wisdom pushing us forward. Experience and insight add energy and possibility, the ability to contribute to our society's vitality. With more Americans living longer, this force could power up our society to move ahead in new ways. But society hasn't figured out how to embrace or make the most of this yet. So it's this idea that we have this ingenuity and this creativity to approach this problem, and again, the rising tide raises all ships. And so in their research, these frames were the ones that were found to be the most effective at aligning public thought and limiting some of those more one-note models of thinking that don't really serve any positive purposes and that don't recognize aging and older people as they really are. That sort of pigeonhole the experience in ways that just aren't true to the reality that of the diversity that aging people face. So then all of this was compiled into this really lovely toolkit, and this is what I really want to direct you towards. These reports are interesting. There's a lot of really valuable information in them, but everything gets sort of synthesized and coalesced down into this lovely toolkit that they call Gaining Momentum. And what the toolkit does is it summarizes those frames around aging. It's written in a really digestible way, and it's very user-friendly. So hopefully you will have a chance after the call or some other time to look at the toolkit. It's nice because they set it up where you can read the framing brief, where it outlines everything, or you can just kind of take a quick start and jump right in and start looking at some of these topics. And then they bring it down so that there is a visual summary of relevant findings about cultural models. So it basically talks about this idea of the ideal aging experience versus the perceived real aging experience, the idea of individualism, of people making choices and financial planning, that sort of ignores all of the societal impacts that the societal factors that can impact someone's ability to save for retirement or to make lifestyle choices that help them be healthy as they age. It talks about this us versus them mindset, and it gives details on each of those things. And then there is also a game that they have that is meant to help people who are using it identify where some of these biased frames are coming in. So identifying where that idea of individualism is being articulated or shown in a particular statement. And I clicked around on it a little bit. I didn't go through the whole game, but I think it's probably really useful in helping to just cement some of these ideas and improve recognition of where there are some biases going on. Then there is a really great chart called You Say, They Think, that helps to facilitate framing. So it basically has a section on what you say, and one example is, let's say that I would say, ageism must be treated as a serious social issue so that older people can participate fully as workers and citizens. So if I say that to the public, it's very possible that they're going to think something along the lines of, what is ageism and is that really a thing? I don't believe in that. And what they're getting triggered is this us versus them, this perceived reality of what aging is like, focusing on deterioration and dependence and disease, and some suggestions as to how I could have reframed that and phrased it differently to help with understanding. So relying on this value of justice and talking about the idea that this is an injustice when we are paternalizing older people and pigeonholing them and thinking about them as being incapable when in fact they have many, many capabilities. Effectively defining implicit bias and helping the audience think about what research shows and what bias really is and giving examples of that. And then sharing specific solutions to help expand people's thinking about what can be done to fight ageism and to improve outcomes for older people. So that's just one example. And so it's this great chart that has sort of the things that we might want to say and the things that we want to convey and why that's not working and then how we can convey it better so that people understand these issues with more depth and aren't just falling back on those same mental models that don't actually capture reality. So it's a really great toolkit. I hope that everyone will have an opportunity to look at it. And there are lots of, it's like I said, it's done in a way that's easily digested, and it gives lots of really specific tips and things to try and ways to even just phrase things differently in order to open up thinking a little bit more and change the dialogue to something that's a little bit more realistic and that relies on what the experts see a little bit more. So I'm going to stop there. I wanted to keep this particularly short today because I know it's been a busy week for a lot of people. But I want to open it up to questions and thoughts.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Sharon Musser out in Burlington, Wisconsin, Racine County. What I'm wondering, have you, I went on that website, the Framework Institute.
Yeah.
And they have a Framework Academy. Have you experienced, I'm really tempted to subscribe on a personal basis to the a year subscription. It's like $135, but you're accessible to all the modules. Are you familiar with any of that in general?
I am not. The Framework Institute in general.
I did send them a message too. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the whole thing the whole thing is new, relatively new to me. I probably heard about this
MacArthur,
first about a year ago.
Catherine and MacArthur, that foundation, the famous foundation. They're supporting them, so that's what really turned me on.
They have great partnerships. They're getting funding from really respected institutions for the aging work that they do. Let me see if I can find their list of partners. So, yes, the MacArthur Foundation funds them, as do several others, but the aging work in particular has additional funders and partners that are hard hitters, heavy hitters in the field. I mean, the people that you look to for evidence-based information. I'm scrolling through to see if I can find the list here. Let's see. So AARP, of course, not surprising, but also the American Federation for Aging Research, American Geriatric Society, American Society on Aging, Gerontological Society of America, Grantmakers in Aging, National Council on Aging, National Hispanic Council on Aging. I saw that they also got funding from the, Retirement Research Foundation, Hartford Foundation, Atlantic Philanthropies. So they're getting a lot of support and a lot of buy-in from well-respected groups. So that's very important. But no, I don't know much about the Frameworks Academy. So that is something that I can start looking at because I haven't, it's not a piece that I have looked at all yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is exciting for me because I am an older person.
Yes, not an older adult, an older person.
I am an older person, so yes. It's very exciting.
Yeah, and they have, it's not just, the research about older purse people is very interesting to me because that's where I spend a lot of my intellectual time. But they have so many other issues that they're covering. So there's a lot of value, and I think the Frameworks Academy covers all of it. So I can, if you try it, if you decide to pony up the money for it, let me know how you like it because I would be interested to hear your experiences with it.
Yeah, because it's not really the way they described it. It's really worth the money, and you get what you pay for too.
Yeah.
You know, to have a year's opportunity to be accessible to all the models, because I'm dealing with a family, more of a children and family perspective with my I'm a VISTA too, AmeriCorps VISTA, and that's a little confusing for people because I am an older person. Their assumption is VISTA and AmeriCorps is for younger people. And
yeah.
I have to explain myself all the time.
Yep, and having the language for that is always useful.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Other thoughts or questions?
Kristen, this is Jane in Sheboygan, and I am going into the Guinea, the toolkit, and it looks like some really neat stuff. Even something as simple as, you know, instead of these words and cues, try these words.
Exactly.
You know, so you're right. Pretty cool stuff. So thanks for alerting us. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yes. And this is all, these are things that I am working to integrate into my own language. You know, there's ways that you say things, and once you get into the habit of saying something one way, like older adults is a good example, once you get into that habit, it's really hard to break. So there are phrases and the framing in general that I am trying to now integrate into the way that I say things and the way that I think about things in order to convey information that I have in a way that the public understands, because based on the research that Frameworks Institute has done, the way that I am used to conveying this information, what I'm trying to say isn't necessarily filtering through to actual public understanding. I'm not necessarily getting my message across the way that I want to, and if there's some small things that I can do to make that better in addition to big things and overhauling the way that I'm talking about things in general, that is very valuable to me, and I think valuable to a lot of us. So, yes, please look at the toolkit. I didn't want to go into it and reiterate all of the things that they've explained so clearly there, but it is really simple and useful, and I highly recommend taking a look at it when you have a chance. Even just the quick start guide will get you right into it. Other thoughts or questions?
I just have one more quick thought, though, of focusing on the ageism this issue. I noticed, I don't know if it's a gap or it's just a different way of dealing with it, but I noticed with an older person, we speak slower, but not slower in a way of, you know, a problem, you know, like really slow, but a much slower pace. And and even the way you're speaking, which I love, I really love it, but a lot of times when I'm at workshops and things, and a younger person would be facilitating, I would literally have to ask them to slow down in their pace because their words are so, their pace is super fast.
Yes.
And I'm just, you know, wondering if that would possibly be considered a gap.
Yeah, so sure. There's a lot of different ways to think about that, right? I'm just from my own personal experience. Yes, I talk very fast.
Because you have a special rhythm that I love.
Yeah, but I do. Mm-hmm. I rattle. I mean, I go fast, and I have spent a decade trying to slow down. So this is the slow version. And so yes, I often will run into people asking me to speak more slowly. And that doesn't, I mean, from my side, that doesn't bother me at all, right? I want people to ask me to speak more slowly. Now, it's sort of, I think on the flip side of that, if people are seeing someone that they perceive as an older person and responding to that by speaking more slowly without their necessarily being an articulated or a body language or some other way to know that there's a need to speak more slowly, that could be ageist. And it depends on, the hard thing is that it depends on how people are perceiving it, right? So, like, if the older person is perceiving that that's paternalistic, that's, mm-hmm. that makes it a problem. If it's perceived as being helpful, maybe it's not a problem. And where it comes from the person who's doing it. Are they doing it because they know that this person who they've interacted with before doesn't understand them if they're talking at their regular pace? Or are they making assumptions? So it's the intent and it's the outcome.
Yeah.
And so I'm guilty of this here where I'm using the word ageism and I'm not defining it. So ageism is discrimination against older people due to negative and inaccurate stereotypes, right? So it comes on both sides, and it's often something that is unconscious and unintended, and it's not as if someone is trying to belittle an older person. It's just that they're making assumptions, consciously or unconsciously, that are impacting their behavior. And so, yes and no. I think the important piece is to be self-reflective on that. So, you know, if I were giving a presentation and I found myself speaking more slowly because it was an older audience as opposed to because I'm just in general trying to speak more slowly, I would want to self-reflect on that, and I would want to go, am I being ageist right now? Because that effort of self-reflection can have a big impact on the way that someone thinks and the way that they behave. So that sort of went in a different direction than your question went, but maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the whole core for me is redefining aging, mm-hmm. because especially with the baby boomers and other people now, you know, other than the baby, are getting into that stage of life.
Yeah.
That's over 65. Redefining it to me. I'm going to be advocating for that one.
Mhm. Yep. And there's a lot more when it's redefined, when you use language, and when you can get other people to use language that embraces that sort of redefinition. The point is to embrace that richness and the diversity, and to sort of realize that the way that we often think and talk about aging, or the way that the media projects aging, the way that they depict it, that's a really oversimplified version of the way that the world really works. And so embracing this idea of the diversity and the complexity just makes life a much more rich experience and gives us the opportunity to open that door to public change in a way that facilitates well-being for everyone.
Thank you.
Other comments or questions? All right. Well, like I said, I wanted to keep this really short, and it already is past my definition of really short. So I will release you all back to the rest of your Fridays, and hopefully you all have a good weekend. If you do look at or use the toolkit, I would really be interested to hear what you think. I'm interested to hear how you use this in your day-to-day life, if you are going to use this in any of the programming that you do, if this just changes how you think. I'm curious to hear what what feedback you have on this and what you think about it and how you use it. So please do let me know. And otherwise, as usual, I'm always interested in hearing from you all. So please contact me as you see fit. Next month, May, the first Friday at 11, we will be talking about publishing. I have not planned that one out yet, but I'm envisioning it as really a conversation around scholarship and extension. I, more than anything else, will want to hear from you all about what that looks like and feels like, and also what you see as the barriers or the struggles or the hesitancies, if they exist around publication, whether that's time constraints or not knowing where to publish or not having co-authors, whatever it happens to be. I'm really just looking to hear about what scholarship and extension is like and where you struggle, and we can talk about that a little bit more. And I'm hoping it'll be a conversation, too, among people who have more experience with that and then some of our newer folks who are still dipping their toes in the water on that side of things. All right, so I will end it there. Thank you all very much for your participation. I know it's been kind of a crazy week for everyone, and I know there's a lot on everyone's minds. So, again, please reach out if you feel the need to. I'm happy to talk to you at any time. And otherwise, just enjoy the rest of your weekend. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Have a good weekend.